Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Jewelry isn't a gift you give just once. It's a way to remind your loved one of a beautiful moment every time they see it. Blue Nile can help you find the gift that says how you feel and says it beautifully, with expert guidance and a wide assortment of jewelry of the highest quality at the best price. Go to BlueNile.com and experience the convenience of shopping Blue Nile, the original online jeweler since 1999. That's BlueNile.com to find the perfect jewelry gift for any occasion. BlueNile.com.
Welcome to the Wolverine Confidential Podcast. I am Andrew Kahn.
I'm Ryan Zook.
And I'm Aaron McMahon.
The Michigan softball team is headed to the NCAA tournament, though they're traveling much farther than they would have liked. The baseball team is nearing its postseason with the Big Ten title within reach. Plus, one Wolverine is now in the Basketball Hall of Fame, and another is headed there. We discuss that, and maybe even some football. I don't know. I don't know if we'll have enough time. Coming up on Wolverine Confidential. All right, guys. Good to be back with you.
Happy to have you back on.
A lot to talk about today. Let's start with the softball team. Carroll Hutchins and the Michigan Wolverines are going to the NCAA tournament, and they're traveling. They are not hosting a regional. That's kind of the controversy right away off of their draw. They're going out to Seattle to play Seattle, which is, I don't know how fair that is exactly right. For...
Well, and Seattle's not even the host.
They're not the host, right. Yeah. Right. Yeah. Washington being the host, but still, I think they often do fill out those pods with, teams that are closed for travel purposes, but still, yeah, it's just interesting. I take it Michigan was one spot out. If they're playing the team that was the number 16 overall seed, 16 teams get to host and they're the next best seed in that little pod. Does that mean they missed it by one, or what's going on here, Ryan?
To be honest, I have no idea. This was a strange selection show. I mean, Washington was the fifth ranked team in the country, and they get the number 16 overall seed. So the committee didn't make much sense with their selections. And let me tell you, Carroll Hutchins was not happy at all on Sunday night. We got to speak with her over Zoom a few minutes after their selection, and she was in her car, didn't even have her video on, and very short answered and basically ripped the committee for not giving them a host seed. I mean, all they did this year was go 36-6, clinch the Big Ten title even before the final weekend, and outscored opponents 208-55 this year, led the nation with a 1.10 ERA, and still were left out of a host seed. Now they have to travel across the country and face a team that a lot of people would think is much better than the number 16 overall seed in the country too. So really tough draw for them. And I get that the committee had a difficult job this year because, I mean, the Big Ten was one of the few conferences that only played a Big Ten schedule. So they weren't able to boost their RPI by playing these out of conference teams like some of the SEC was, ACC and Pac-12 and whatnot. And the Big Ten was down this year. I mean, I know Carroll Hutchins likes to boost up a little bit, but I mean, only three teams earned a bid: Michigan, Minnesota, and Northwestern. And the competition wasn't great. So Michigan's RPI was only 31st. But again, Michigan can't control that, and they still took care of business by going 36-6. I mean, it's hard to do much better than that. So I can kind of see why the Big Ten was punished a little bit, because they weren't able to play those non-conference games. But still, for 12 out of 13 SEC teams to make it, including Georgia and another team are on 7-game losing streaks, and they both got at-large bids, and 7 SEC teams are hosting. So tough look there by the committee, but they thought that the SEC was much superior than every other conference in the country.
So if I'm understanding this correctly, I don't know if the committee's been asked, but it sounds like they've just overvalued the Pac-12 compared to the Big Ten. They just figured the Pac-12 had a better year.
Yeah, well, so there were six Pac-12 teams, and I think they more favored the SEC than any other conference. But yeah, probably.
I'm talking about like Michigan, Washington, you know, in regards to that.
I mean, I would have Washington host over Michigan too. I mean, they were the number five team in the USA Today coaches rankings. I mean, they're 39-9. So you can argue that their season was just, I would just thought that Michigan would be in the running, battling against some of these SEC teams that did a host bid. I mean, right. There was two teams behind them, behind Michigan, that did earn a seed in Tennessee and Duke. Even though Duke can't host at their own campus, they're still considered a top 16 and the number one seed in their region. So yeah, I was expecting them to slide and take one of those spots from the SEC, but that just did not end up being the case. And they're not the only team that got screwed. I mean, Clemson was Michigan's 18th in the ranking. So, I mean, they were kind of on the bubble, but Clemson was ranked 13th, won the ACC regular season title. And they were ranked as high as number 10 and they are having to travel to Alabama for their regional too. So Michigan wasn't the only team slighted by the committee, but yeah, a lot of discussion coming out of Sunday selection show. That's for sure.
Yeah. I mean, you could say, the Big Ten was down because it only got the three, you know, bids, but you know, the flip side of that is they only got three bids because it was determined that, you know, the perception was that the Big Ten was down. So, and whether that's correct or not, it's impossible to say. I mean, we saw that with, you know, on the basketball side too, to a certain extent, that, you know, non-conference games were played by some leagues, including the Big Ten, but, you know, a lot opted for, you know, it was smaller sample size and in some cases just not a lot of marquee matchups. Obviously it didn't affect, you know, the Michigan men's team ended up getting a one seed anyway, but it is interesting to see how it all plays out. I mean, Michigan, you know, they are a power in softball. I mean, they're in this thing every year and they've got their fair share of deep runs. So you'd think there'd maybe be a little bit of benefit of the doubt there with a, you know, Hall of Fame coach, but
is their 26th straight appearance. I mean, yeah, they haven't gotten out of the regional in a few years, but mm-hmm. still, I mean, they're competitive. Their top two pitchers, they've been good the previous 2 years too, and helped carry them. And they're even having a better year this year. So I think Hutchins's primary beef with the committee was like that she didn't believe that they evaluated teams correctly, didn't pay enough attention to the teams, just went off of RPI too much instead of getting to know these teams and watching the games. That's what was one of her biggest criticisms. So yeah, I mean, we'll see if they come in with a chip on their shoulder. It'll be a tough regional. Like Andrew said, they open with Seattle. Portland State is also in that regional. So, I mean, I assume it will come down to Michigan and Washington is the top two contenders in that regional. But you never know this time of year.
I was just going to say, it's probably safe to assume that they're going to be pretty motivated going into this thing, whether it's Hutchins motivating them or the players themselves, but like to not be seated and not host a regional, you know, probably has to be pretty upsetting. And it could be, like you said, it could be used as a motivational tactic, which, you know, could bode well, you know, in the tournament.
So they play Seattle at 8 p.m. Eastern time, Friday.
Friday, yes.
That game on TV, do we know yet?
What? It is on one of the ESPN networks, I'm pretty sure. Yes.
Now I know, again, that's Friday. It's only Tuesday here as we record. But Zook, do you have any tidbits for us on Washington? You shared some already, or even Seattle, this first round opponent. I know sometimes you got some funky stats for us or something like that, but it's early in the week. I don't want to put you on the spot.
Yeah, it is. It is early in the week. So we'll have some more coverage later in the week on that. So I don't know too much about the team, so we'll definitely dive in here later this week. I know, yeah, Washington's another perennial power that's been there a lot. Michigan had to travel to Washington. I think it was 3-4 years ago and lost to them in the regional too. So, I mean, it's not like Michigan's traveling across the country the first time in a long time. I mean, they were just there a few years ago. So yeah, I mean, that's tough to have. I mean, they're going to spend all day traveling on Wednesday and then have to get used to the time change. And yeah, being slighted could sure motivate a team. And I definitely think Michigan was slighted here on Sunday.
Stay on the diamond. The Michigan baseball team nearing the end of its regular season, still in the hunt for a Big Ten title. Where do things stand with them?
Yeah, I mean, only six games left in the regular season. Right now, they are one game back, tied with Indiana. with one game back of Nebraska. So it's going to be a fascinating finish here. I mean, and Michigan picked up a key series win over the Hoosiers. They won 10-3 Friday, lost 13-8 Saturday, and then won the rubber match Sunday 6-1. I was at Friday's game and saw Michigan hit three home runs and come up with some timely pitching to get out of some jams, and had another strong performance on Sunday. And I mean, Michigan, it's going to be tough because they finished the year against Maryland, who is one game back to them and then currently in fourth place, and then travel to Nebraska, who currently leads the Big Ten, to close out the year. So it's going to be tough. Michigan has not won a Big Ten regular season title since 2008, even though they've had a lot of success here recently. It's still a big bucket list item for Eric Bakich and Michigan. So we'll see if they can pull it off. I mean, they lead the Big Ten with 277 runs scored. They had a good weekend at the plate against the number one pitching staff in the conference of the Hoosiers. So we'll see if they can keep it going. And this is a much different looking team than the World Series team a couple of years ago, though. I mean, they brought in a bunch of grad transfers, and it looks like it's been paying off. I mean, I wrote about this after Friday's game, but they're getting tremendous productions from some of these guys that have come in and made an instant impact. I mean, Will Proctor, a reliever from Georgia, earned the save on Sunday, didn't allow a base runner in an inning and two thirds to close it out. Catcher Griffin Mazur, who was at UC Irvine, had two hits Friday, including a three-run home run. He has six home runs this year and leads the team with 32 RBIs. Their shortstop, Benjamin Sims, came over from Kansas. He's hitting 348 with five home runs. And infielder Christian Molfetto from Stanford is batting 298 with six home runs and 28 RBIs. So, yeah, I mean, they have a top two pitching staff in the conference and lead the league in hitting. So we'll see if they can stay hot here over these last six games and win the Big Ten title.
Something to watch. Again, we've talked about this, the success of some of these non-revenue sports, if you will, at Michigan, and we're seeing it continue here into May. Let's talk about the Hall of Fame, the Basketball Hall of Fame, Springfield in Springfield, Massachusetts. Over 60 years for anyone associated with, you know, the Michigan basketball program to get in. And now we're going to have two in a row here. So Rudy Tomjanovich was officially inducted on Saturday. Again, he goes in for his work as a coach in the NBA with the Houston Rockets, but he did play at Michigan. He was an All-American player for the Wolverines. So he's got that connection. It's interesting with the Hall of Fame, you know, the Basketball Hall of Fame, you can get inducted twice. Like Bill Russell is going in next year. And I was like, Bill Russell, he's got it. How is he not already in? Well, he is already in as a player. Now he's going to go in, you know, as for his time as a coach.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting how they do that. I mean, my understanding, I'm just much more familiar with the Baseball Hall of Fame. I don't know. It's more of a stats driven sport. I don't know. I think a lot of people are just better at, you know, seeing a guy and saying, all right, knowing from an era, okay, that guy's Hall of Famer, as opposed to in some of these other sports. But I'm pretty sure they just, you go in and kind of your whole body of work would get you in. But so be it. Anyway, Rudy Tomjanovich goes in. And then the very next day, Sunday, we learn that Chris Webber, who many felt had been snubbed for years,
well deserved.
It is going in. Okay. Yeah. I mean, I agree. First of all, just sort of the logistics of that. Someone I think did ask me on Twitter about it. Like, why, you know, the very next day after an induction ceremony, they're saying the next class. And it's completely because of, you know, COVID, everything got pushed back. Typically it's April of, you know, whatever year the class is announced. And then they get inducted that September, you know, several months later, that same year. And then, you know, the cycle repeats the next year. You know, this year, the class was not inducted last September in 2020. So it didn't, my guess is they didn't want to then announce the next year's class before the previous one was inducted. So they didn't waste any time, though. Once it did happen, they went with the next day. And, you know, Chris Webber, who, again, is going in for, you know, his time as an NBA player, but, you know, what he did, you know, at Michigan, I feel like counts to some extent, yeah, for his candidacy. But yeah, you guys have any thoughts on Webber? Aaron, you were saying you definitely think well-deserved.
Yeah, Chris Webber was ahead of his time when playing times in the NBA. I mean, he was a big man who could shoot from the outside. He can dribble. He would have fit in today's NBA, and he would probably have been successful doing it too. So I think, you know, maybe while his stats maybe weren't way up there like some folks would expect a Hall of Famer to be. I think he helped mold a pathway for guys his size and with his ability for the current, you know, play style, the NBA. Well-deserved. He had some really good years. He was a good player. I totally agree with that. And Ben Wallace, too. I know he's not Michigan-related, but he has a state of Michigan-related, so to speak. I thought Ben Wallace was well-deserving, too, just for his role on a team that, you know, a few folks thought would get where it did.
I mean, I never watched much NBA, especially back then, but I will say back in my PlayStation 2 playing days on NBA Live 2003, the Kings were definitely my favorite team to play with. They had Mike Bibby on running the point and Chris Webber. It's like, man, I love this team, man. So I always seem to score with them. So that's, yeah, it definitely seems like it's well deserved. I think
that factored into his, was that discussed in the room when they put forth this candidacy? Yeah, no, I don't want to be that guy who's, you know, dumping on a Hall of Famer, but I don't know. Ben Wallace, to me, again, that's, I guess, just my familiarity with the NBA Hall of Fame, you know, basketball Hall of Fame versus baseball. Like, he doesn't seem like he's a Hall of Fame. I don't know. It's you think of just the era that they play in, like, all right, was he ever one of like the top 10 guys like in any season or whatever? And I know he did a lot of things that don't show up on the stat sheet because he was just a tremendous defensive player and was, you know, awarded, you know, recognized for that. And I think just the championship helped so much. I mean, I think that's partly why Weber, there was the delay with him, is that he didn't have that ring. I don't think he ever even got to a finals. I believe he was part of that team that was like literally cheated out of one, you know, when the games were fixed. But
I wonder if there's any other guy in the Hall of Fame that is in there averaging fewer than 6 points per game like Ben Wallace is.
It's valid. And like, I'm not going to argue against it.
Yeah.
I guess Ben Wallace played a special role on a special team. And ironically, he wasn't even named finals MVP, right? Of that NBA final series. And I think it went to Chauncey Billups.
But I
think he still, I think, was the MVP of that team. I don't think the Pistons would have gotten where they did without him. And again, you know, as someone who grew up in the Detroit area watching the Pistons, I was a big fan of the Pistons growing up, and I remember that team vividly. He played a huge role. I think there's argument either way. I really do. I don't discount it, but at the same token, that he was a special player at a special time, and I don't know. He did, like you said, he did a lot of things that didn't show up on the stat sheet, and I think sometimes that does need to be recognized. And I think this is probably one of those situations where, you know, it is.
Put him in the Pistons Hall of Fame, then, is what I say. But no, I get what you're saying, and again, I don't want to take away from his moment or whatever, not that he's listening, but yeah, it is interesting to me, some of like, just again thinking about like baseball and some of their comparables, like just seems like okay, he's in the Hall of Fame, but okay, so be it. But yes, we've got two players with Wolverine connections, and you know, Chris Webber's is even stronger than Rudy Tomjanovich, as I'd say, just because he's more recent. And he played for, Rudy D was not he did a lot of things at Michigan, but he didn't win. Those teams were not, you know, particularly, you know, good that he was on. He was kind of sandwiched between, you know, successful eras for Michigan basketball. Chris Webber, the opposite, you know, only spent 2 years in Ann Arbor, but, you know, one of some of the, you know, the most iconic, you know, teams in college basketball history. So yeah, he gets his due, and it was, you know, fun to see, you know, his fellow Fab Fivers, you know, including, you know, Jalen Rose, you know, there, you know, being so happy for him, and you know, being able to, I saw, you know, a clip of an interview with him, you know, live on ESPN, and it was nice to see, given, you know, some of the beef that they've had in the past. So we'll get another one. So that induction will be in September for Weber. All right. Well, that wraps up. Oh, we said we might have some football news. If we had time, Aaron, you want to?
We actually have some breaking football news.
Yeah, okay. There we go.
It's not huge, but we do have another Michigan football player who has entered his name into the transfer portal. This one is running back Gage Garcia. If the name doesn't ring a bell or sound familiar, it's because he hasn't played a game. He was a true freshman this past fall, part of Michigan's 2020 recruiting class. He was a three-star recruit, did not play a down, did not play a snap in a game this past fall. Michigan spokesman has confirmed that he has entered his name in the portal. That would make 15 scholarship players since the end of the regular season, since the end of the season, 2020 football season, who have entered. Not a huge surprise, just because when we look at the running back depth chart, A, he didn't play a ton last year, didn't play at all. And B, Jim Harbaugh has already said that Hassan Haskins and Blake Corum are going to get the bulk of the carries. They've got, in Michigan's, obviously, as we all know, got a couple of running backs that come in that they're considered the future, and Donovan Edwards, and then we got Tavier Dunlap. So there just probably isn't a ton of room for Gage. Gage was unique because he did play, he was on the wrestling team. So he was kind of a two-sport athlete, but he's going to go elsewhere, it looks like, at this point.
I wouldn't be surprised if he picks, I mean, I don't know, but I know he was considered a better wrestler coming out of high school. So I wouldn't be surprised. Playing two sports in college is tough. So we'll see what he decides to do here as a new destination, but I wouldn't be surprised maybe if he picks one or the other.
Yeah. Yeah. He's from Pennsylvania, so he could certainly go back home. I'm sure there's some options for him there. And then another note we've talked about in the past, the hire of Courtney Morgan as Michigan's director of player development, player personnel. Sounds like there's further restructuring in the recruiting department. Michigan spokesman has confirmed me, and I wrote about it earlier this week on MLive.com, that they have filled the director of recruiting position with Ashawn Larkins. If you've recognized his name, it's because he's already on staff as an analyst. So he's been promoted as director of recruiting. But Michigan has also moved Jarrett McElwain, the son of former Michigan assistant coach Jim McElwain, who's now the head coach of Central Michigan. His son is still on staff. He's been the recruiting staff since 18. He is now the head of scouting. Now, how they differentiate, I don't know. I haven't got a clear answer on, but it sounds like they've kind of got a new two-person dual role type thing under Courtney Morgan. So while Morgan's obviously heading up recruiting and the like, he's obviously handling other duties because we got the NIL law coming down. He's probably going to be dealing with that. So it's more of a kind of a, you know, roving, you know, ownership type deal. And he's going to have Ashawn Larkins and Jarrett McElwain below him.
That'll become a full-time job, by the way. That NIL stuff will be, I listened in on just this video chat essentially with, a bunch of different college basketball coaches, but you know, they had a lot of questions. You know, they had like an expert on there, and a couple had their notepads out and they were asking questions. Like there's going to be a lot of uncertainty and confusion. And yeah, it's a whole new ball game. But
it's funny you mention that, because I was just talking to Ryan, I think, yesterday about it. But I would not be surprised if Michigan ends up hiring Michigan football program and even basketball, perhaps. Maybe the athletic department as a whole, they end up hiring additional folks just to deal with this, the NIL law, mm-hmm. and, you know, sponsorships and all, dealing with agents and the like. So it's going to be a murky situation here for the next couple of years as schools and coaches and athletic departments kind of figure out, you know, navigate the grounds, because it's going to be different. I mean, and since we don't have a federal law at this point, every state's going to be kind of doing it differently. So you've got to be able to navigate the waters in the different, laws and requirements in each state. So it's going to be interesting next, 6, 12, 18 months.
Yeah. I mean, there's the one side of doing it, you know, by the book to make sure, you know, you're following all the rules. And then there's the other kind of people you probably want to hire, the brand managers and social media experts to do it well, to, you know, maximize, you know, opportunities for your, you know, the student athletes that you're recruiting. You know, it's just another part of the recruiting pitch.
And then you've got the compliance department for the university kind of coming up behind them, making sure everything's going how it's supposed to. So it's going to be a very, very interesting next year or so, I'd say.
Sounds like a future podcast episode or two. All right. Well, thank you for listening to this episode of Wolverine Confidential Podcast.